Welcome to Inside Personal Growth Podcast. Deep dive with us as we unlock the secrets to personal development, empowering you to thrive. Here, growth isn't just a goal, it's a journey. Tune in, transform, and take your life to the next level by listening to just one of our podcasts. Welcome back to Inside Personal Growth. This is Greg Voisin, the host of Inside Personal Growth. And joining me on the other side of the camera, Mary, you want to move your head over here so people can see you for the video. We have her book, Life Flashes, a memoir, Mary H. Regan. And you can get to her website the same way. It's MerrieHRegan, and that's .com. There you can learn more about her, her book, how she brought this together. There's some great videos there. There's interviews there. I welcome you all because a memoir is a very personal thing. And Mary, I just want to start off this morning by letting the listeners know a bit about you and also kind of a bit about this book. You are a former educational tutor, small business owner, and part-time freelance news and feature article writer. She resides in the state of Massachusetts. She savors reading, writing, ballroom dancing, singing, homemaking, and yard work. And she watches a variety of television shows. But this memoir is really moving, especially how you've weaved it together. You know, I'm going to let the listeners know that you started writing this in January of 2007 and finished it in February of 2021. And you didn't really think about making it into a book until 2010. So we're going to start off, Mary, because I think when someone writes a memoir, or at least you didn't start off doing it, it was kind of like a journal, and you let the people get exposed to your life, you really have a mission to teach people about what they can learn from their own life flashes that happen to them. And you start the book off with being in a pretty dark place personally. You had been taking antidepressants for 2 years. You had an encounter at that point with a supernatural being, you said. And I love this spiritual part. Can you tell the story and tell the listeners what happened that day for you?
Yes. I was living in a group home at the time. I was very ill. I'd been emotionally ill for a number of years. And I woke up on this January morning. I dressed very lightly. I went outside. It was about 35 degrees. And I began walking down a sidewalk. And I was feeling that I didn't know how much longer I could go on with feeling the sense of hopelessness that I did. And I remember all of a sudden non-verbally saying, "No, I don't." And what I realized, even like not even until recently, that was the first time that God was speaking to me. I was answering God because God had asked me, "This is the way you want life to end for you?" And I said, "No, I don't." So faced with mortality and life ending and not wanting life to end in hopelessness, I saw that God was there, that God was real, that God was listening to me. And I began talking with God about why I had been felt long time hopelessness and about things that I had done that I felt that were unforgivable. And
what do you attribute that hopelessness to? I mean, up to that point in your life, obviously, that was where you kind of started this off. But what were the incidences that you maybe didn't write about that created that feeling of hopelessness and despair and depression leading up to that, to where you encountered, you say, a supernatural being, God? People can call it whatever they want. But the reality is you were using your intuition to connect to a higher source that was talking to you, saying, "This isn't the time to end your life like this." Right.
Well, I was being given a choice, and very good question that you asked, because I can thankfully summarize it very easily. The reason what led me to being where I was is that God was on the back, a spiritual high power, God, or however one defines transcendent, was on the back burner of life for me. What was on the front burner was what people thought of me, what size house I was living in, marital status, financial status. All those things were in the front of my thinking and feeling. And so there, when this is the case, there isn't a way to be content. You won't be content. You can be happy for moments. Oh, I bought a new car, I met somebody new. I found a new place to live, but you will not, you cannot, it's not possible, 100% sure, to experience true contentment without faith, no matter
Oh
how
yeah,
one experiences
it's
faith.
fleeting. Our listeners are huge spiritual and personal growth. I'm gonna call them devotees, you know, they're all eager to learn about these things and learn about people's experiences. And you know, you wrote this memoir, you mentioned that in many cases, and I remember hearing this on the video that you did in the library session, you said you felt like electricity was coming through your hands. You started in 2007, but as we said, you didn't decide to turn it into a book until 2010. Why was the creation of this book so cathartic for you? First part of the question. And also, why did you find what you found writing this way, how allowed you to work through these dark events in your life? Because we all know journaling can be extremely cathartic. Writing can be extremely cathartic. I remember being in my psychology class and they asked us to write about challenges we had and then go take it and burn it in the fireplace, like you're burning up an old memory or a bad memory. How did you come about all of this? Because I found it quite interesting.
Well, what I've come to appreciate through the years is, again, the world teaches you success is good, failure is bad, joy is good, sorrow is bad. Not true. They're all experiences that are part of the human journey. And so, again, once you prioritize one over the other, that's what sets you up for these highs and lows of mood. It's all part of a journey. So it enabled me, writing the book enabled me to chronicle the highs, just chronicle the journey, and also to chronicle it with fellow human beings who are from varied walks of life, who are also being influenced by past, current, and yet to come events. We're all very similar, and that's why I included people who, national, local, personal, and animal figures. I didn't set out to include any of them. It was where meeting these people, everyone, and to this day. It's where I'm led. I don't choose it at
Right.
all. And
Did you what
so
did
as
what did
far as
you find? What did you find? Pardon me, Mary, but what have you found, including your faith in God, including your faith in a higher power, that has allowed you to better modulate these highs and lows, to live a life of much more, and that's going to be my next question, around between happiness and contentment. I mean, you mentioned that these big highs and lows that you used to have in life. Tell us the differences between happiness and contentment, and what do we need to do to become more content within ourselves? Because, you know, the job is really an inside job. It always is, right? And no one, I always tell my listeners, and they've heard this from me before, if you're expecting somebody else or something to make you happy, you're kidding yourself. Because that's never, whether you're in a marriage or you're in a romantic relationship or you buy yourself a new car or you fill your bank account with money, None of that in and of itself makes you happy. But I do know, because we have a lot of Eastern philosophy people that listen to this show, that certain practices in Buddhism, meditation, yoga, contemplation have all been ways for people to find solace, and to be able to live better with this. Did you find anything like that on your journey?
Oh yeah, prayer is prayer is paramount. I do some formal prayer, but then I talk with God throughout the day, all day and all night. And I also know, I've begun attending church services. But I also in some ways I respect that the faith within me is broken within a million pieces. There are things that are still very unresolved for me. And I know, but the good thing is that I know that I'm trusting that they can be resolved, instead of saying, oh, it's just the way it is, it can't change. And that there are people out there that if I attempt to do it on my own, I will go nowhere. Being on your own is not being independent. It's being on your own too much, being too solitary,
Have you always been kind of a loner? And
somewhat, yeah.
where did you
But I think,
find?
what I'm finding, again, being solitary and being social are very similar. When you're alone, I'm interacting all day with people. I'm just internally interacting with them in a way that's different, but similar. It's not the same, but similar with socializing with them. So, and they're both, they're not the same, but they're very similar. So, and I find that once that I realize that, it's eases the ability of me to be social with people. I'm not, I'm most people in general, people are one or are not one or the other. We're a combination of both. That's how we were made.
Right.
So in
Do you find these communities of support through the things that you do, like you mentioned
yes.
your church or
Yeah.
other outside
I'm a
activities that involve?
ballroom dancer. I just joined a singing group. And I mean, we're in community with people. And I mean, I go for walks in the woods. I see people there. I don't confine it. I don't confine community to one group of people. And I also accept that people, we all, there's no such thing as the one, except for for God or the transcendent being, because we all wake up, we meet, whether we leave the house or not, we meet people every day. We bond, whether we live in the same house with that person or not, the said person or not, and then we move on to the next person. Is that a reason for us to disregard the boundaries of any relationship? No, it's not. But it is a reason for us to respect that. People, all relationships are precious. They're all limited. They all end at some point on earth, as well as when we die, and then they all endure. And so that is was be I was growing up, that idea of the one was really embedded within me for a long time. And now, as I've in the last dozen or so years that I've let it go, it's very freeing. Just as the idea of, religion in the early 70s and 60s, it was like, oh, it's a crutch. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be dependent. I'm self-sufficient. I can, And what I realized was I was becoming more and more isolated, and it took, decades. But then I realized what we reconnecting with God that actually connecting with God or transcendence or high power is what enables you to be fully free. I feel a sense of independence now, having reconnected with God through dance, through singing, through church and other things, everything I do, that I'm
Well,
fully independent. I'm not a slave.
you're doing activities that are bringing joy to you and to your heart. I mean, I think that's the most important thing. And one of the things that brings Everybody that I know of, because I have two little dogs, are animals. And
Oh.
animals always bring us joy,
Yeah.
especially if you're an animal lover. And you had a special relationship with your dog, Jara. And on August 31st, 2015, you guys were walking in the woods, and there was this river going by. And then afterwards, he kind of got lost, and somebody found him. Can you explain what happened and why you believe another miracle happened in your life? Because actually, from the way you wrote that and told that story, that was definitely a miracle.
I'm glad you see it as such because it is. And it's also helped me to appreciate that miracles happen every day, but they happen in very small, that's like one of the, that's a large miracle. But miracles happen every day in small, medium, well, I would say that was an extra large, but small, medium, large, and extra large. And so it just enabled me to appreciate and to
Well,
see that they happen in
it
small.
was a warm day and your dog jumped in the water,
Right.
right?
He jumped
And
in, yeah, he jumped in
then
the
he got
water.
caught in the current,
Correct.
and then these guys with a boat came along. So
But
go
wait,
ahead and
just a minute.
finish it.
It wasn't quite as romantic as that. He got caught in the, he got caught in the current. But now there's no boat in sight, and he's being pulled by the current down the river. I'm standing on the edge, and my heart is, being feels as though my heart's being ripped out of my soul. And all I could do, I want to jump in and save him, but I realize I don't. There isn't sufficient strength in me to swim to him and save him. And I call out to him. I say, "Jora, Jora." And then all of a sudden, I said, "He's gone. He's gone. I'm like, he's gone. I've lost him." And then I hear a voice that says to me, "Don't be afraid. I'm here." Within seconds, a boat with two people in the boat, I think it was a small boat, motor boat, comes around a bend, and I see the boat, and they move toward Jordan. I said, they don't know what's going on. The woman in the boat, it's a man and a lady. The man staring at the ladies in the bow, and she says, "Do you want help?" And I say, "Yes." And she said, so then they keep going and they pass Jorah. I'm like, what the heck? I'm thinking, oh my gosh, they've abandoned me and I'm losing, and now I'm losing Jorah. So all of a sudden she says, "Do you want help?" Again, she says, "You want help?" I say, "Yes." What I didn't realize at the time that they were probably strategizing a way to guide Jorah to shore, because if they pulled a 70-pound soaking wet dog into the small boat, motor boat, it probably would have capsized the boat. So anyway, what they do is they go over to Jorah and they cradle him with the boat, and then they move the boat toward the
For
shore.
sure.
And as he's coming out of the water, the lady in the boat says, "Here's a bottle of water. He might be thirsty." So we're walking. So then I hug him and kiss him, and I'm profoundly grateful. And then we're walking back toward the car, and absentmindedly, I'm not thinking about him for a few minutes. And he was a wanderer too. He was a wanderer. Anyway, all of a sudden, I can't find him again. So this lady comes along with her two children, and she says, "What's happened?" And I explained to her what happened. She said, "We are not leaving you until we find that dog." I was stunned. So that we all walk together, and we walk through the woods back toward the car. We can't find him, and and we're just about to be at the car, and Jura is standing in front of the car.
Yeah, I remember that. That
Go
was a cool
figure.
story.
Go figure. Yeah.
Well, when we
So.
have animals in our lives and they mean so much to us, they mean as much as people. I always tell people that, they're just, when a dog passes, It's like you've lost your best friend and your best lover and your best everything, because they're just, they're unconditional love. So that's the key.
Well, I think that, no dog's ever going to send a man to the moon. However, but they're evolved. Animals are evolved in ways that people aren't ever going to be. I won't ever know love the way I did with Jura again. I won't ever know it the way I do when I see a bird, outside, birds chirping on trees when it's 20 degrees and there's snow on the tree limbs and the birds are on the. I won't ever know love like that again.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, I do. I have known the seen the birds, but
Well, but the
it's just
dog is very special.
it's wondrous love. Yeah, they
You know,
are.
you had a
They really are.
very fondness as well.
How old are
They're
your
been
dogs?
eight and
Oh,
what is
what
she?
happened?
Three. Eight and three. Are you there? Are you there?
Are we there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What happened?
I don't know.
What? How old are you? Oh, okay. How old are your dogs?
The dogs are eight and three. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I was gonna
I'm
say, you
just
know,
we're receiving a message that we're.
yeah, they were eight
Go
and
ahead.
three. You speak about this author, David McCullough, and then I looked him up on the internet, and quite a prolific writer.
Oh, very.
And he wrote the book The Wright Brothers, and you mentioned that. And he also wrote you a letter.
Yes, he did.
Can you tell the story about the letter he sent to you? Also, the spiritual experience you had when you went to his home after he'd passed away and heard a voice that told you to look for the people that passed in your life in your heart because you were grieving so much. And so you had two, what I would call kind of epiphanies or spiritual experiences. One was you had this great letter, this person encouraged you to finish your book. And secondly, the same man passes away and you were very close, in a sense. And you went to his house and then you get this message, this huge spiritual message. Will you speak about that?
Well, yeah, yes. I wrote a letter to David McCullough, and he had just moved to the next town. He and family were building a house in the next town, and they had finished building it, and he moved there. And I thought I wanted to connect with him, and I had read this book, The Wright Brothers, and I really liked it. And so I thought maybe he'll comment on a few and give me advice on a few chapters of Life Flashes, a memoir. So I wrote to him, but I did not think he would write me back. He was in his 80s. He was writing another book. I had never met him. I just said, And then a month later, 2 days before Christmas, he sends me a letter. He says I couldn't, and which was on a standard typewriter, which he'd used for like 60 years, and he said I couldn't on on letterhead stationery, and he said I couldn't let this old year end with saying how much I enjoyed reading your letter and looking at the chapters of your book. And he later said that he said as a as a he said he encouraged me to finish the diary and the book. And he said, as a historian and a biographer and an author, I depend upon people's diaries, the diaries of people and letters, and they're not writing them anymore. So
Right.
he that I found it, and I thought, well, maybe this is, and I think the diary form enables, enable me to write from the heart and from the soul, as Anne Frank, I mean, Anne Frank wrote a diary, and her, I just found that I found that format very appealing, and I honestly, I to answer a question that you asked me earlier, I don't fully know why I wrote started writing the book. I don't fully know why I started writing a diary. I don't fully know why I decided to turn, to turn into a book. I don't know, but that's one of the foundations of faith is accepting uncertainty, and I don't have to know,
Right.
and I don't have to. And sometimes I don't have, there's times when I don't like it. I don't like what's gone. I'll say, God, you know what? I'm not happy with you today. I don't like this, and I don't like what's going on. I mean, God says, cool. As long as you trust me, we're good to go. You don't have to, you don't have to like what's going on. I do love God, though. Does
Yeah.
that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So
Yeah,
I
yeah.
love that. I love that there's that freedom to say, I don't like it. You don't have to like it, but I do trust. And I think that that's part of the reason why there are things that there's things that I've wanted to happen for decades that haven't happened, but I trust that there's a reason why, and I don't have to like it. I don't have to understand it, but I do trust, and I believe that God knows me in ways far beyond the way I know self or others. So I trust that, and that gives me a lot of contentment.
Well, it's always good to have a spiritual belief. I don't think people necessarily have to be religious, but it's so important to follow something where you believe in something greater than yourself, because so much comes from that. It's almost like if you're giving to others, the experience that you get, because when you're all consumed with yourself, and you have no way to allow yourself to give beyond yourself, you're literally an emotional wreck most of the time. Because the world is more than just you. And why don't you take the opportunity to share your blessings with other people? That's what I tell people. That's the reason for my nonprofit and working with the homeless, like you have done. And you know, I want
Can I
to.
just say one thing, just to uphold what you just said? Very simply, regarding contentment, if it's all about you, or if it's all about others, you're not ever going to be content. If it's all about a high power or God, it includes you and everyone around you. Welcome to the world of contentment.
Yeah, I tell people that what you just said is so true, but to find something that you're passionate about, you know, have a purpose in life, be curious, define your goals. That doesn't mean you're always going to achieve them exactly the way you think, because they don't always come that way. There are twists and turns, and that's, you know, that's the cool part about having a faith in something, knowing that it's still working in your behalf, meaning God is there for you or a higher being. And I want to come to this point in the book where Jara died, and it was extremely traumatic for you, Jara. And you spoke about a dream you had where Jara spoke with you. And I remember you speaking about this when you were in the library video. That you had this visit in your dream, and it was so real. It was like you were holding his fur and you could feel him, and you could, you know, it was a sense of oh well, wow, now I'm gonna wake up, right? But this was such a real dream. And I know people have these totally realistic dreams. Can you tell the listeners about the experience and why you felt that it was so real? Meaning, I mean, I know you expressed yourself as this being the most real thing. It was like he was there talking to you.
It was, and I think that God was speaking to me in that dream. And respectfully, I wouldn't say that when Jura died, it was traumatic. It was heartbreaking. But on the other hand, it was such an honor to know and love Jura. He reminded me, losing him was reminded me of losing a beloved king, whose subjects love and adored him. And he taught me about acceptance of uncertainty and quiet perseverance and humility in a way that I, in a different way than I had ever known before. So after he died, he was almost 17 years old when he died. I one day I saw him in the kitchen, and I said, "You came back." And he said, "Yes, but I can only be here for a few minutes." So I put my arms around him, these arms around him, and I could feel the fur, his fur on him, and I could feel the blood running through his veins. I felt what it was like. I kissed him on the nose, and it felt just like it did when I kissed him on the nose. And then all of a sudden he was gone, and I woke up and I realized I'd been dreaming. So I was bereft because I said, "Jura, why did you come back to me only to leave me all over again?" So a few weeks later, I had another dream, and it was about these two men who were walking along the two people who were walking that loved Jesus. And he after he had been died and been brutally treated, and they're grieving the loss of him. And so in spirit, Jesus, who has died, comes along beside them, and he says, "Oh, well, what's going on?" And they're like, "What do you mean, what's going on? Don't you know what happened?" And so he go walks along with them, and then later on in the day, I won't share, but later on they realize it is Jesus, and that he's with them, and that he loves them. And so what I believe that God was saying to me, and he's with them, he remains with them for a long while, and so in spirit. And so what I believe that God was saying to me through Dura was that I love you. I didn't leave you. The way we express love for one another has changed. That's all.
Yeah, that's a great story.
And
I love that
thank
story.
you. And you
Because
do. You get over, and it helped me with grieving my parents, and it helped me with grieving with losing my parents. And also, I mean, David McCullough, after you asked me about that, I didn't fully answer it. I drove over to where his house, and I sat outside the house, which is what I did one day a few years after my parents died, and a house had been sold and somebody else was living there. And I thought, "Oh my gosh, I'm not ever going to see you again. It's all gone." And so I believe that what God was saying to me then is that you're looking for them in the wrong place. They're in your heart, they're in your soul.
Right.
That's where they are, and that's where all relationships primarily begin, continue, and end.
Yeah, good point.
So,
And I want to tell people that Life Flashes, here's a copy of the book. You should go get this on Amazon. And I have just two last questions for you. Great. As if any of our listeners is in the interest of writing a memoir, what advice would you have for them? And why do you believe that this journey through all these life flashes has been so cathartic and healing for you?
Well, first of all, as far as as far as writing a memoir, writing anything, I think three ca characteristics that were developed within me, character building qualities that were developed dealt within me, which are important for anybody, including writers, is discipline, determination, and devotion. Discipline because it's important, which I used to think as a young person, "Oh, that's routine, that's monotonous, it's boring." But now I see discipline as a form of love. And if you're disciplined, you set aside time to be with your beloved, be with a beloved, or do writing every day. It's different for every writer. That's between your writer and the creator. But you do that. You're responsible. You accept responsibility for what you write. You work with making writing that is detached, not overly focused on potential readers or book subjects or self. So there's a sense of there's a one of the things that somebody said about being a writer is that one of the joys of being a writer is you get to look at your life all over again. You get to look at it somewhat of a, from a distance, and that's what you want to do, so that you don't swallow the reader into what you're going through. You give them a chance to look at it from somewhat of a distance, and so they can assimilate it into what they're what their experience and make choices. And then also too, you review what you write on a regular basis. There were things that I wrote in the book and I look at them, I say, yeah, that's true. Well, that's good. So I'd go back a month later and I'd say, yeah, that's true. That's good. And I'd say, don't put it in the book. It's not appropriate. Again, you're developing a relationship, you're in relation as a writer, you're in relationship not only with the readers, but also your book subjects. And it's very important to be respectful of your book subjects and also to set limits with your reading audience. They really don't have to know it all. They don't really want to know it all. They just want to know the essential lessons that are important, the essential details and the lessons that are important.
Yeah,
And
you can learn how to gracefully edit. And I would say that's probably what you did. And if you were to leave our listeners with three important bits of advice about life, love, success, failure, and learning to be okay with themselves, what would you tell them? Because your book is filled with all kinds of life flashes around love, life, success, failure, and really learning to just the big one is to be okay with me.
Well, I think again, put God on the front burner. If you're okay, if your goal is to be essentially to be okay with me, you're not going to be okay. If your goal essentially is to be okay, to be at peace with God, you will be at peace not only with God, but with everybody around you, and you'll be at peace with self. Secondly, do what you love, not what you think you're supposed to do. That what you're supposed to do is not ever going to lead you into contentment. Third, accept, I would say, accept conflict, loss, and waiting as natural parts of living. I've found that one finds it increasingly easy to navigate life when one accepts conflict, loss, and waiting. They're natural parts of living. They're all leading you to where you're going. And finally, none of us are given what we can't handle. And if you don't believe this, just look around you at what other people are going through. I see people every day that are going through things, and I observe what they're going through, and I say, I couldn't go through that for 5 minutes. So that says to me that we're not given what we can't handle, and that it's all. There's a way to move through anything.
Well, I want to tell our listeners that your relationship with David McCullough end up with I'm going to say a testimonial on the back, and I want to read it. In the work that I do, I'm ever dependent on letters, diaries, unpublished memoirs, etc. I often think that future historians and biographers are going to have little or nothing to work with since nobody writes letters or keeps a diary anymore. David McCullough. This is a great memoir. I want to encourage all of my listeners to go out and get a copy. We'll put a link on Amazon. Mary, I want to thank you for being on Inside Personal Growth today, sharing your
Thank you.
wisdom, your life insights, your life flashes, a few of your stories, and relating to our listeners in such a great way.
Thank
What would
you.
you want to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that if you go to the website, my pen name is Mary, MerrieH Reagan, REAGAN. There's a couple of videos on the website that will, they're short, they're one's light and comical and entertaining, and the other one is inspiring, solemn, and thought-provoking. And if you look at each one of those, it'll give you an overview of the style of the book, and you'll be able to discern whether or not right away whether or not you want to read the book. Thank you very much, Greg, for for interviewing me. You are clearly a very professional, very disciplined. You prepare, you show up, you ask interesting questions, and I can see that you really all through the you really have a connection with your audience all through the interview. You've been talking with me, but then reconnecting with the audience. And I can see that that relationship is real and admirable, very
Oh,
admirable. I yeah.
thank you for the compliment. I appreciate that, and I'm sure my listeners will appreciate you as well. And I just want to encourage them to go to MERRIEH, is for middle initial, REAGAN.com. As she said, there you'll find videos, you'll find excerpts, you'll find information about the book, and connect with her. There's a spot where there you can send her an email. Just connect with her. So, Mary, thanks again for being on Inside Personal Growth. Namaste to you. Blessings to you. Have a wonderful rest of your day. And we
Thank
look
you.
forward to seeing you again soon.
I hope so. I hope we'll be able to talk for a few minutes afterwards.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on Inside Personal Growth. We appreciate your support. And for more information about new podcasts, please go to insidepersonalgrowth.com or any of your favorite channels to listen to our podcast. Thanks again, and have a wonderful day.